Next on the program, a gentleman you know from his work, well, everywhere, television, film, stage, game shows, talk shows, and these days, a traveling troubadour who will be appearing back here in Maine next Friday night at the beautiful Stone Mountain Arts Center in Brownfield. We're pleased to have John Davidson back on the show with us. Hello, John.
Hey, Rich. Good to talk to you again.
You are the king of New York. Congratulations on what sounds like an unbelievable show Monday night at Birdland.
Well, you know, it's such a crazy business. You and I have both been around a while, and we went from, you know, the last time I saw you, I played a date in Gardner, Maine, at what will be the new Lincoln Theater there. They're raising money for it. And it was a small crowd, I think. It was just a bad night or something, or maybe they didn't promote it enough, or maybe, I don't know what, but Saturday night at Birdland in New York City, it was oversold. It was old. There were people standing in the back, and it was three standing ovations and just a fabulous crowd. And I basically did the same show that you saw there in Gardner, Maine, and it just went through. Of course, it was a great audience in Gardner, Maine as well, but it was very small. So, I mean, it's just crazy how things work out. Yeah, it was. Birdland is my new home in New York. I hope to play it several times, and all my silly jokes and my silly comedy songs went well. And I must say that the biggest thing, they gave me a standing ovation on a ballad that I wrote about my wife called "I Still Want to Be Your Superman," about a guy who's been married for, I've been married now for 36 years. And I wrote a love song to my wife. And when I do it, I really get into it. I'm very passionate about it. And several of the other ballads I get passionate about. So it was just a great response. And thank you. How did you find out about it?
Well, I saw it on social media. Saw it on Page Six. You got a great write-up. It was a star-studded audience. Bob Mackie, Paul Schaefer, Karen Ziemba, Gilbert Gottfried. People coming out of the woodwork to see you.
I called all my friends. I said, "You've got to support me. Come by." So it was, it was just a great night. And thanks for knowing about it.
Well, listen, last time you were on, John, we were mostly talking about the Gardner Show and what you're doing with your concert. It was after the concert window performance. But I wanted to take a little bit of time today and talk about the early part of your career, because you have done so many things through the years. And that goes back to really the guy that took you under his wing, Bob Banner, who said to you famously, "Don't be a spear."
Yeah, this was in the mid-60s. I went to New York after graduating from Denison University in Ohio and with a BA in theater arts. And I went to New York and got in a Broadway show and played the juvenile lead. I think I stood out because I was so Midwestern and so not New York, but yeah, got a Broadway show. And then Bob Banner, the television producer who had discovered Carol Burnett in a show called Fade Out, Fade In, I think, and developed her as a variety person. Yeah, he came to the show and he said, "I want to develop you as a variety. Not to be just a spear, but to be more like a Swiss Army knife, you know, a jack of all trades. I want to show you how to do sketches, how to do comedy. Yeah, how to sing. I mean, how to do some albums." And we got a Columbia record contract. But he put together a club act for Las Vegas for me. And I had an act that was much better than I was at the beginning. And then got me into film with a Disney contract to make Disney musicals. And helped me to do plays, dramas. I've done Shakespeare over the time. But it's been a confusing career in that sometimes people say, "John Davidson is appearing tonight. Well, what's he going to sing? I've never had a hit record, but I've just done so many things." But maybe that might be confusing to people at times. But my favorite thing is to sing with my guitar, and that's what I'm doing now as a troubadour. And you're right, that's what I'll be doing at Stone Mountain a week from today.
Now, I'm a little jealous. Now, I'd have been far too young at the time, a little bit younger than you, but I had such a crush on one of your first co-stars. And when I was a kid, watching Leslie Ann Warren, and then you got to do a Disney film with her.
Yeah, we wound up making two. The first one was The Happiest Millionaire, and we played opposite each other, and I got to look into those beautiful eyes every day for about 4 months. And then that was the follow-up to Mary Poppins. And during The Happiest Millionaire, Walt Disney was alive. That was the last picture that he worked on. And then I did the one and only Genuine Whispers with Pam and Bam. Went after Walt was gone, and so everybody was wandering around saying, "What would Walt have done?" You know, it was kind of a weird time at the Disney lot there in Burbank. But he was a great man. He called me John and insisted that I call him Walt. And the kids come up to me and tell me how much they enjoy the videos. They're available in the Disney package of videos. So, yeah, it's given me a whole new career with kids. So.
And you did a series with Sally Field. What was that experience like?
Well, I had such a crush on her. We made, during the pilot, just a great lady. We were both married at the time to other people. And the series sold. It's called The Girl with Something Extra. She could read my mind. She had ESP. And imagine that if your wife could. I think this is a series that was trying to figure out whether it was a drama or a comedy or what, and somewhere in between. It's called a romantic comedy. But Sally Field is a great lady, and she was making the transition from Flying Nun and Gidget into winning Academy Awards, so she was in transition. It was an interesting time in her life, and I just was glad I had the experience of working with her.
We're talking with John Davidson here on Downtown. You mentioned the Vegas show, and in your act, for at least a little while, your opener was Jay Leno, right?
In Reno and Tahoe and Vegas and Atlantic City. Yeah, Jay Leno was a comedian for hire back then. It was before he got the Tonight Show. And he was brilliant, and slowly people began to realize that. And yeah, he was my opening act for a while. Now I'm but that's the way it goes. Same thing was true of Dylan Rivers, for example. I was her opening act, and then my career got going, and she opened for me then at the Hilton. I opened for her at the Riviera. She was my center square when I was first in Hollywood.
You did so many talk shows. You filled in for Johnny Carson some 87 times through the years. We talked to Bombastic Bushkin. Henry Bushkin a couple of years ago. And I got the sense from him and from hearing some of your comments too on Gilbert Gottfried's podcast that Johnny Carson, while he was very good to you, was a guy who was pretty private and pretty shy and tough to get to know.
Carson was, I knew that I could do well as a guest with Carson if I turned it back on him. If he was asking me about my parents, I'd say turn it back on him. So yeah. But he was such a funny man, and had such not an awkward delivery, but I think he would sometimes feel ill at ease. He'd touch his tie as kind of a thing of touching his tie. He had kind of a quirky thing, quirky way of delivering lines, and. But a great gentleman and a great man.
You got to work with so many legends through the years. One that we had on our show a couple of years ago, Julie Andrews, who could not have been more gracious when she was on with us. What was it like to sing a duet with her?
Well, it was a little weird because we were singing a love duet, and I don't know how much older she is than I, but I think we come across as being of different age. Yeah, we were singing a love duet, and it's just an incredible voice, and we blended very well, I guess because of my Broadway background, of course, her Broadway background. We both came from Broadway. But what a lady. What a charming, cultured lady of depth. And just a great lady. And it's so, it's such a shame that she's gone through this. You know, she had an operation on her vocal cord, and I think it didn't go as they thought, and she was unable to sing for a couple of years there. I don't know whether she's singing now or not, but she had quite a setback vocally. But she's such a great lady.
Can you share the story you told with Gilbert on his podcast about Lucille Ball maybe trying to hook you up with her daughter Lucy?
Well, it was very interesting. I guessed it on a show that she did with her daughter, and maybe they did this with several guys. I think because her daughter was of dating age, of course, I think many of the stories involved Lucy Arnaz, daughter, having a male counterpart, having a male romantic lead, and I was put in that position, and so I did a lot of scenes with her. One time we were shooting one of the love scenes, and Lucy was watching from the back of the studio where we were shooting, and all of a sudden she said, "Stop!" and came down the aisle with a bottle of vodka that was full of water, I think she was drinking water from a vodka bottle. I don't, because she wasn't drunk, but she was just furious with Lucy Arnaz because she didn't like the way she was playing the scene and didn't feel that she was working hard enough. You know, she was quite a taskmaster. And just laid into Lucy, and she threw the bottle on the floor, and it smashed into thousands of pieces. And I was just scared to death. I just didn't want to be there. I saw another side of Lucy at all. And I think that was her perfectionist side. I think she was hard on herself, and she was hard on her daughter, and certainly that day. She was a perfectionist, and wanted the lighting and the sound to be right, wanted costumes to be right, wanted the script to be right, wanted the director to be right, and wanted the performances to be 100% of what they could be. That's why she had such a great career. But she sure was intense, that guy. Scared the hell out of me.
John Davidson with us here on Downtown. How did you get to be friends with Penn Jillette?
Well, we both went to a Free Thought Society get-together in Washington. I've wrestled with religion for years. And a while back, a couple of years ago, I just said, "Well, Zach, why don't I just say that I'm an atheist and just, you know, just say I've tried to be religious in my life. I come from a religious family. My dad was a Baptist preacher. My mom was an ordained Baptist preacher. And I even thought of going into the ministry at times. But I took a philosophy. I was a philosophy major before I became a theater arts major. Took a course in comparative religions of the world and logic 101, the basic logic course, because I was a philosophy major. And the two just didn't go together. I began to realize, I think, that religion was, I think, this was created for man out of fear and because of the mystery of life. There's so much we don't know. And, you know, gods were made, the sun was made into a god, the moon was a god, the plants, in order to try to control this chaos that we live in. And so I began to look on religion as being man-made, but I still called myself religious, and I wrestled with religion and went back and forth, going to church, not going to church. But finally, about 10 years ago, I just said, "Well, heck, I think I can be an inspiration to people by being an atheist." So, of course, in my act, I never try to preach about this. I'm not a missionary. I'm not trying to make the world non-religious. But I just have stated that for me, I'm not religious. I'm secular. I'm a secular progressive Democrat, and I enjoy living my life that way and being very honest about where I stand.
Well, and in the big picture, it comes down to how you treat people, and religion is very separate from that for many people. There are lots of religious people who aren't terribly kind. It really is about human interaction more than anything else.
I think so. And I think my dad would agree even though he was a Baptist preacher, he would agree totally with that, that he was not hung up on some of the miracles that are quoted in the Bible. I mean, even the resurrection of Jesus, I think he felt that that is not necessary to be a good Christian, to even believe in the total full-body resurrection. And I think he was not a religious fundamentalist. He of course, believed in evolution. No question about evolution. So he was very in favor of modern science and all that science is trying to do, but he certainly felt that there was a supreme being. But I think my dad would agree with my being honest about what I felt.
John, you got some great shows coming up. I want to let people know. Next Friday night, Stone Mountain Arts Center. It is a beautiful facility down there in Brownfield, Carol Noonan's place. That is an 8 o'clock show. You can go to their website for tickets and more information. You're going to be out west for a while, but you're back here in New England in July for a show at the Guthrie Center in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. You'll be in New Hampshire in late July, Middleborough, Mass. On August 10th. Bennington, Vermont. People can go to your website for more information as well at johndavidson.com. The people in New York know it because they loved your show at Burland the other night. I know it from seeing you in a fantastic performance down at Johnson Hall in Gardner. You want to see one of the best entertainers in the business, check out John Davidson when he's in a town near you.
Oh, Rich, that's enough. That's enough. You're too kind. I'm embarrassed.
John, we love having you on. Look forward to the show in Brownfield, and we'll get you back on the radio later in the summer to spread the word some more.
Thanks, Rich. You're such a pro. I'd love to do your show whenever you can fit me in. Thanks.
You got it. Thank you so much, John. John Davidson with us here on Downtown.